Hence, it's relative but not arbitrary. And in this way, he attempts to make an objective and intelligible standard, even while taking account of the fact that one must speak in ethics by way of generality and outline, rather than with the exact precision that we might sometimes like, an over-precision because it fails to take account of personal circumstance. Now the project of acquiring the virtues and the place of pleasure. Aristotle's idea is that these virtues, when we have acquired them, when we've done the hard work of acting again and again to try to be just the way just people are, or to try to be courageous the way courageous people are, that these patterns of development require that we become habituated to a certain feeling and to a certain way of seeing things, and that we take stock of who the experts are in our community. He thinks of pleasure as having a place largely as an indicator of when we've gotten a certain virtue. That is, some people will be inclined to see pleasure as the reason why they do something. Aristotle's sense is that pleasure has a different role to play. Pleasure plays the role of telling us when it is that we have achieved a certain level of comfort in doing a deed that objectively is correct. So that, for example, when we're trying to achieve the virtue of temperance, it's very much going to be a matter of being attracted to food or attracted to drink or attracted to some other kind of bodily pleasure. We'll be feeling the attractions, and that if we're honest, part of what we'll notice is how strongly this moves us. But merely the fact that we're moved by it isn't yet an indicator that it's good. Rather, when we can see that the way in which we're moved by attraction to a certain pleasure, for example, attraction to a certain kind of drink or attraction to a certain kind of food, when our attraction matches up with that which is good for us, then we can be said to have the moral virtue, because now we're operating because we find this particular right thing so attractive. We might think, for instance, of the ways in which an exercise pattern is hard at the start. And when one is just starting in on some of the exercises and doing through some of the calisthenics and making some of the repeated efforts at doing that particular set of gymnastics, well, it's hard. The back hurts, and we find that our muscles aren't used to moving in that particular way. And yet, as we get a little bit further along in the regime, we find, well, okay, it's not so hard. We can get ourselves to do it. And we find that we've got a little more breath and we've got a little bit more stamina and we can do it for a little bit longer. And then when we've truly gotten muscle tone and when we've gotten ourselves habituated to the fact that, yes, this kind of exercise, cardiovascular exercise, really does take a certain amount of time and we know we're out there and the blood is coursing, and we find that we like it, and so that we do it regularly, and we do it not because it was so painful, but we do it precisely because we enjoy doing it, and the enjoyment is at the right thing. So too with virtues of courage. One might find, and one often finds this in public speaking. Perhaps you've had this experience, but I can certainly remember from high school days having to speak in public and wondering how in the world to do it, and preparing intensely and having everything written out. But of course, one does that, and one is petrified over what one will say and whether the words will come and what the audience will think. But then as one gets a little bit more familiarity with the material and can present it to audiences large or small, one builds a little confidence, and then one starts to even enjoy the prospect, precisely because it gives you the opportunity to explain important things like Aristotle's ethics. And one enjoys that kind of communication. I think you can see how this is fitting together with what we were considering in the previous lecture when we were talking about Aristotle's sense of the proper function of human beings as being rooted in rationality, being rooted in our use of our minds and our use of our choices. It's a matter, if it's one of those intellectual sorts of courage, when we're speaking in a dangerous situation, a situation where we could be misunderstood or in which we could be opposed vigorously and vehemently by somebody who has the opposite point of view, or whether we're just nervous about how we will present ourselves.